Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio. Speed City.
Good evening, gearheads. Welcome to your Sunday night with Speed City. This is John Massengill sitting in the studio in Austin, Texas with...
Freezing.
Yeah, with frozen Jonathan Green and Les Kaiser. How are you, gentlemen?
Freezing.
Yeah, what the heck? We were 82 yesterday and 25 this morning?
Yeah. It was all right. I was hoping the ski lifts would open.
I was like, it's so cold. I need to go out and buy a new car. So I did.
A used one.
A new used. New to me.
There you go.
All right, gearheads.
And I love this guessing game you've started with me.
Well, you finally saw it in the parking lot. So, hey, guys and gals, we have a very, considering that it is completely off season, I am extremely excited.
There's a lot to talk about.
There's a lot. We have a lot to talk about because the biggest thing is we have some clips that are from Michael Andretti and from Zach Brown. And these clips are from the ePartrade
webinar.
Yeah, the webinar that they had. It's like the State of the Union for Motorsport for 2021.
Yeah, it's like a four-day thing, and a lot of the industry, Racer, were effectively running it effectively.
Yeah, Racer.com, and mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it really did talk to all the kings of industry in America, and really great because you didn't just get a quick 10 minutes with Zach Brown. You got an hour.
Yeah.
So that you can get, deep down.
Yeah, and Marshall Pruitt was the host, had some fantastic questions. Great job, Marshall Pruitt. And so we've got a bunch of clips from that, and we've got some other things we're going to talk about, some F1, some IndyCar stuff. We got some news about Circuit of the Americas. It's not breaking news, but it's something we're going to discuss about.
Greatly anticipated.
Yeah, about repaving. So we're going to talk about that in the show, and we got.
Is that the red carpet for the mayor?
Yeah,
that's what they're repaving.
Yes, they're repaving Les's entrance.
Okay, good.
His special mayor.
Is Michael
entrance.
Buffer doing it?
Don't even say that. Can we say his name without paying a license?
You can't even say his name. I don't know what. I mean, I'm going to claim the same thing. I mean, I'm going to say outgo the license. If anybody says that, I'm going to sue you.
You're going to get millions of dollars.
And Crofty's in trouble.
Hey, okay. We got lots of good stories, though. I mean, I don't know how much we're going to get to this week because next week, my voice is breaking again. This week and next week.
Well, you're still young. It'll drop.
And so we got lots to talk about. But I want to start with one of these clips because it kind of sets up everything that we're going to talk about with both Michael Andretti and Zach Brown, these clips that we got. And the first one, this is Zach Brown talking about the health of Formula One and talking about everything from the size of the crowds, he talks about Netflix, all that. So let's hear from Zach Brown on this first one.
So I think the sport's never been healthier. If you look at and it's amazing, and a lot of credit, most of the credit, to Liberty. So it wasn't long ago that you always had two or three teams going bust.
Yeah.
And then you could buy a team out of administration. Now you have 10 teams that are all very well financed by very successful groups and or individuals, none of which want to sell. You know, Michael, who, I'm very close to, that was a very real deal Michael Andretti and real money. And the seller ultimately ended up not wanting to sell. That same team was bought out of bankruptcy or on the verge of bankruptcy 2-3 years ago. So I think from a health of the grid, I've never seen in the 30 years I've been following Formula One and the kind of 15 I've been in the business of Formula One, I've never seen all 10 teams so strong, which is awesome. And that's going to push up franchise value and, you know, success breeds success. Then you go to countries that want to host Grand Prix. We kind of have a problem now. We have more people that want to have Grand Prix than I think we can put on. I'd advocate, which I've been vocal about, I'd like to maybe see us go to 20 races, but service 28 markets and maybe 15 or fixed races or 16, pick a number, and 10 rotate every other year. And so we've never had more demand for Grand Prix. So I think we're going to get to the point where we're going to have to walk from some Grand Prix, not Grand Prix walking from us. Then you look at Austin, that audience was unbelievable. Brazil was a huge race. You're having record attendance. Netflix has been spectacular for the sport. Corporate partnerships, we've been ringing the bell often with great, great brands. Formula One, if you start looking around the track, they've got more brands. So sponsorship is very healthy. So when you have healthy teams, healthy Grand Prix, great TV ratings, great side programming, digital's through the roof, great sponsors, great racing, I'm extremely bullish. And 3-4 years ago, I couldn't have said, I would have said, oh, there's a couple teams on the verge of going bust. We were in trouble. Having a hard time, getting these Grand Prix to be funded. You know, the racing's not that excited. And that's turned around 180 degrees. And I think we're just getting started.
God, this is such good stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, really good. And you want my opinion? I totally agree with that, especially the part about the potential of 2-year rolling Grand Prix. We've always had more Grand Prix than we can put on. And unfortunately,
more demand, yeah.
Yeah, more demand. And because of COVID and all the rest of it, it's kind of led from what we used to have, which was a 16-round Grand Prix season, 15-round for a long time. But it's now led to 23, which I really do think is too much. And I would like to see almost, you could even get into a social media situation with this, which is you've got your, what I would call core events, like your Spas and your Monacos. And if you like, there becomes a rivalry between countries. So let's say the most popular race or the best race of the year is the Netherlands. Good race, just come in.
Right.
But it becomes both, it gets 200,000 plus. That's one criteria. It gets, it puts on an amazing race. And the fans say, that was our number one race. Then suddenly it gets into the top 10 and becomes one of the golden races, let's say. And then the other 10 vie. And it becomes almost a system whereby, Malaysia comes back on the calendar and they go up and up and up. And so there's an incentive for Miami to do better next year and Austin to compete for the best Grand Prix. I mean, it really, really, there's always a best Grand Prix voted for, but why not make it part of, the whole culture of Formula One? Where we go.
I'm with you on that, but let's put some meat behind it. So let's put some actual numbers, attendance, TV viewership, maybe even some metrics around the race itself that went on, because I don't want it to just be a popularity and a big state get everybody to vote and that they had the best race or
no
country. And so, I'm with you on that. I like that.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that Zach is alluding to, which is something that has been going on since Liberty started, is the new Concorde agreement, the new salary cap, and the fact that Zach is absolutely right, including McLaren. All the teams are solid. They've signed up for 5 years, including Haas, who weren't 100% sure. So you're avoiding the Marussias and the teams that the Caterhams that can't make it. And now suddenly you're in a situation where, frankly, Andretti, and he alluded to that. We're going to hear from Michael in a minute. But Michael has set up the stall, which is that deal went south. But now an American can go, okay, this is a popular sport. I need $250 million to get involved from the get-go. And from there on in, I can bring blue chips in to either pay for that $250 or I could raise $500 through finance. But I know what I'm getting into now. That's what I like about Formula One now. There is a, you know, 10 teams. Here are the points. Here's the money. It's a lot more of an open book in Liberty's day, I think, than under Bernie. Whereas, you know, Bernie would try and support. Don't get me wrong. Bernie did a hell of a job of surviving and keeping people like Williams involved. They too went through a terrible time. And he helped them get sponsors and he helped them get drivers. And he got paid drivers like Maldonado and a few others. But I don't want to see Formula One continue to go down that road. I'd much prefer to see strong, robust franchises, which is what we have in the NFL. So it's an American model.
Yeah, and external influences like Doralton Capital that bought Williams. I mean, those guys are there to make money. And so when you see that happening, you know that something's going in the right direction.
Well, and there's a good example, right? I don't know much about, this is my father's world, but I don't know much about ROI or return on investment. Yeah. But the bottom line is now, as an investor, as a financial investor in a business, and it just happens to be a dynamic and fun one, but with lots of hospitality and going around the world. But the bottom line is if you have a guarantee of finishing ninth and you know what you're going to get for finishing ninth, you can weigh that up against a five-year program and say, okay, well, let's say we get to the top five. That's our goal. Then we'll be earning way more than our investment. So the ROI is there to be seen, and it's physical, and it's almost
tangible. Yeah.
It's tangible, and it's not sort of, well, if we sell a bunch of widgets. No, you're part of a franchise. You're part of a sport that is clearly growing and going into new places.
Yep.
So I do think that the financial guys can see now a reason to be involved in Formula One that wasn't there before.
All right. Well, before we go to break, I want to play this one clip from Michael Andretti because I want to have a little balance between the two of these today. So this clip from Michael is talking about, is really asking the question, why does he want to try F1? So there's Michael Andretti.
I think you just said it's the biggest racing series in the world. And I think it could just do wonders for our brand, you know, internationally. Obviously, we are international with Formula E and Extreme E, but, you know, to do Formula One is the ultimate. And so I've always had interest in that. And you know, it was really, really disappointing that that deal didn't come together. We were literally probably 48 hours away from getting the deal done at that time that we thought. So, yeah, I mean, I still very much would like to do it. You know, opportunities are becoming less and less. No teams are really for sale right now. So, you know, we have to, you know, see what happens in the future, but there's still interest. You know, I love Formula One. It's the ultimate, you know, racing experience. And like I said, for our brand, it would be just huge. You know, it just takes us to the highest level you can be in.
Yep. I mean, it's pretty simple.
He wants
to be at the pinnacle.
Well, and it makes sense. Both he and Penske have really got their tentacles out in the last 5 years, racing in Australia, racing, as he says, in Formula Extreme and Formula E. You know, it's much more than an IndyCar team now. It really is a brand.
It's a full-on motorsports powerhouse.
Yeah, you know? And if you go to the Formula E pit, you know, it looks every bit as Andretti as the Indy pit. So, you know, the brand is there. And yeah, I really do think that Michael, you could see how it was all aligning with Mario's background with Ferrari and you know, what he did back in the day, sort of, you know, or with Formula One as a status sort of thing. You just think, okay, and the Italian heritage, you could see Alfa Romeo would have been a fantastic fit, but they got screwed, basically.
Well, somebody asked me about how many teams can be on there. Okay, so Andretti couldn't get that. There's no teams for sale, as you just said. So I checked into it. FIA allows 12 teams the Formula One grid.
Well, you just made an interesting point, because I think that's what I think could be happening. When people look at what's going on with the growth, you've got it in the running order, the growth of ESPN's coverage, the growth in America. There's potentially going to be three races in America. If you are an American investor now, why not approach Michael and say, okay, I'll back you in a brand new Andretti Autosport team, become the 11th team. You heard it first.
Boom.
All right. Well, on that note, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to take some questions from social media, and we got some more clips, and we do have lots more stories. Listen to Speed City Live from Austin, Texas, back after a quick break.
does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
When you leave the Circuit of the Americas today, you need to go check out our friends at Iron Wolf Ranch and Distillery, just 40 minutes west of Weird in the beautiful Spicewood, Texas. They produce a wide variety of unique, award-winning spirits, including bourbon, whiskeys, gin, vodka, and rums. They're kid and dog-friendly with yard games and Crego's Pizza and Wings on site every weekend. Enjoy a full bar, tasting room, bottle purchases, and live music when you visit the ranch. Check them out on Facebook and Instagram, and always ask for Iron Wolf at your favorite bars and liquor stores across Texas. Iron Wolf Ranch and Distillery, bold spirits, Texas attitude.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers, the best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
Hi, this is Mario Andretti, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, what do you got, Jonathan?
Did you get Mario's Christmas card?
The one on Twitter?
Yeah.
Yes.
See, I'm trying to make it veil as though he'd written me a Christmas card. No, the one on Twitter. I thought it was awesome with that huge Christmas tree and all the trophies behind him.
Well, he does that every year, dude.
I know. Mm-hmm.
And the best thing about
that. Well, it's the first time I made the list.
Okay. Well, the best thing is that everybody replies with their photo of their Christmas tree, and he comments on every single one.
Do you think he really is Santa Claus?
He's Santa Claus and James Bond rolled into one.
It all rolled into one.
I actually did it this year. I posted a picture of my Christmas tree, and it was several days later than when he posted. I thought, he'll never see it. About 12 hours later, there he is posting him a nice tree, John. And he was saying,
that's a great.
And what's crazy, he looked at my profile and says, oh, I'm a dad of kids and all this. He looked at my profile and responded to me as if he, you know, I can't believe it.
You and Mario next year, Thanksgiving.
Well, all you have to do is reply to Mario on his Christmas post, and he'll
bless
talk
him.
To you.
There you go.
Okay, boys, I want to take some questions from social media, and we got some people asking questions on YouTube. And Paul Bryan.
The answer is 43.
42.
Ah.
42 is the answer.
No, yellow!
Paul Bryan tweeted at us yesterday, I think earlier today, and was saying he had a question too.
He's a colorful fellow.
He is a colorful fellow. Let's address the one from Drew on YouTube, because Drew said, we need Zach's comments on Danny Ricks driving the Earnhardt NASCAR at COTA, unless you went out there and talked to Zach Brown right after Danny got out of the car, didn't you?
Absolutely. You know, that was fun. For one, it was just fun seeing a vintage NASCAR on COTA.
Yeah.
And getting put through its paces. Couple of donuts out there pulled off, but I had the moment to speak to Zach Brown as Danny Rick came in and they were pushing the car back behind the fence. And I asked Zach and I said, this probably wasn't a wager you minded paying up, right? And he goes, yeah, that's good. And so, I'd love Zach's personality to do things like that with the drivers. And, you know, Danny Rick is always there challenging.
Yeah.
You know, Zach came in the booth in Monterey when we did the historics, the Velocity. He's actually on the board of the Velocity Invitational, which
he
was
races
fantastic.
There himself.
Yeah, he raced three cars there and brought Pato O'Ward, who amazingly straight off the bat blew up one of Parnelli Jones's glorious Mustangs. Not used to changing gears without paddles. Anyway, enough said about Pato. I love him. He came in too. He was awesome. But you're alluding to, you know, something that Zach is very much a part of culturally changing in Formula One, and that is crossing over between American motorsport and Formula One and really galvanizing it. Ricardo's always been there. He's loved NASCAR, great tribute, as you saw, driving the car. But then Pato gets a drive in Abu Dhabi, and I read a headline today saying, that won't be the last time you see Pato in a McLaren F1.
That is, yeah.
So he's going to do some practice days. He's going to do some practice days for McLaren. So McLaren are leading the way, and you could see if Andretti got into Formula One, how, again, that crossover between American motorsport and then the Indy 500 with Alonso, you know, people doing things that aren't, you know, and that's what Liberty has been allowed to open up. And this sort of fake, you know, war of Monaco and the 500 being held on the same day was really kind of irrelevant. It should never have happened. Yeah. And I, you know,
contrived, maybe. Yeah,
yeah. Contrived. Yeah. And I think there's so
filling
much
in all the high $50 words for that. You
thank
need
you so much. I'll tintinabulate next time I call you.
Can
that,
you go
that is Latin for ringing a bell.
Hey, guess what? We have the producer or less. One of y'all has dug up the actual interview from Coda. Drew, ask on YouTube. Drew, you ask, we shall deliver.
Ask and we shall deliver.
Let's hear from Zach Brown.
Okay. Zach, I have a feeling this was a bet you didn't mind losing.
No, this was fun to see this get out.
That's great. Has he made any comments? We had James Courtney run a NASCAR. And
yeah,
he said it was like wrestling a bear.
Yeah, he loved it. He loved it. Thought it handled a lot better than he was anticipating.
Excellent.
And it's you got to manhandle it. But it was fun watching it go around.
Absolutely.
There you go.
There you go.
Good job.
Yep.
All right, so we're going to answer a few more questions later in the show. Let's go to another clip here. I think I want to go to, this one is, again, Zach Brown. We ask him, Marshall Pruitt asked him, essentially, what will F1 look like in 2022? So, producer, you got that one ready? So, yep, let's hear that.
Well, I think the competition is going to be closer. I think anytime you have a regulation change, there's going to be someone who gets it right that you maybe weren't expecting to, and someone that gets it wrong that you weren't expecting to. I think the racing will be very competitive. It should be closer the way they've designed the cars. They'll probably be a couple seconds slower, but if I didn't say that and you weren't looking at a stopwatch, you wouldn't know. So I'm excited. I would have liked to have seen the regulations opened up. I think now that you have a cost cap, I don't think we needed to be as prescriptive with the new technical regulations. If everything's capped, kind of do what you want. You want six wheels, have six wheels. You want a big engine cover, different wings, you know, so everything kind of has to fit into a square box now. I think because Formula One in particular is about, you know, design and creativity and ingenuity. Why then, if you've got kind of a financial govern on the sport, then kind of let them loose and let people try different things. So that's the one thing I'd like to see us do maybe differently the next time around on regulations is open up the regulations, because you're going to be governed by how much money you can spend anyways.
You know, I want to talk about that because I could see your gears turning.
Mm.
But really, before this, we've interviewed Zach before in small snippets, and I've seen him on television a little bit, but he doesn't. And in fact, this is one of the things he talks about. He's not a TV hog like Christian Horner and Toto Wolff, let's be blunt. And he even says that in these interviews. But I think he's more substantive. There's more to him than I realize. You know, he's very affable and, you know, easygoing, but I think there's more to that behind the curtain. I mean, he really strikes me as as somebody that's got a lot.
The proof is in the pudding. I mean, you've got a quote of how he did it, which was the one that intrigued me. We'll play that either tonight or next week. But let's face it. He has had one of the best stories in the last 5 years of turning around one of the greatest teams in Formula One.
And quickly.
Andy P is putting his hand up. I know wherever he is right now going, agreeing with me because, I interviewed both Zach and Gilles de Ferrand at Silverstone. And we sat down and I knew it was going to be uncomfortable because at the time they were really the only, the only Americans. And they were, it was awful, i.e. where they were. They were ninth in the, they'd got hardly any points.
Hadn't had a win in how long?
Gosh knows. And they were really hurting. And they put a bold face on it. But, the questions were, how are you going to do this? How are you going to turn? Well, I brought Gilles in. I brought this in. We're going to do that. We're getting, we're streamlining it. I'm talking to everybody. And
we've got that.
He's done it.
Let's go ahead and play that one. Producer, that's the one I've got had queued up. It's the path from ninth to winning races. That's the name of that clip. So let's hear from Zach Brown one more time.
Yeah, it was brutal. When I started, I definitely, we were improving, not a lot, but as a team, I wasn't expecting, nor was anybody expecting us to go backwards. The first year I joined, it was shocking that a team that's been so dominant and a legendary team, had fallen as hard as it had fallen. I think being such a big team, your fans understandably get pretty angry because your expectations are up here. So it's kind of like any major sport. When the big team doesn't do well, they get more boos than the small team that doesn't do well, because that's kind of maybe what you expect. So that came in. I look at, how did we get there? And I think you can start to trace it back to early last decade, where you're building a road car company. You have a lot of infighting that's been well documented, Ron in, Ron out, Whitmarsh in, Whitmarsh out, Ron in, Capito in. But, it was just any racing team or even just business. If you have a bit of a revolving door and problems at the board level, that trickles down throughout the organization. And that's what had happened. Was it didn't have, singularly, adult supervision, too much stuff going on. Blend that with the, engine program was not competitive when it got started. It's a great engine now. Understandable that it takes time for these things to develop. Have that, combine that with clearly we didn't have our act together. You put the two of them together, you can see how you slide to ninth in the championship. And so when I started, of my six leadership team, one was here then, my CFO, Laura, but I'd actually promoted her. And I didn't come in going, right, I'm going to clean house. I kind of came in going, because it was quite intimidating coming into McLaren. There's kind of 900 of them and one of me. And I'd never run a racing team before. And so I gave everyone a chance. So I didn't kind of come in thinking I'm going to change this. It was let me understand. And it became apparent to me pretty quickly that changes needed to be made. And so started going and doing that, pretty aggressively. I didn't change a lot of people, just changed the right people. Tried to change the culture. I kind of use this Star Wars analogy, not necessarily a big Star Wars guy, but kind of makes sense that, you look at our facility and our team, we got kind of that Star Wars feel to us, but we became Darth Vader and I wanted us to become Luke Skywalker. So I went from, changing the colors from a dark and gray team to, bring back the papaya to, look, don't touch, to actually, hey, come play with us, and try to get the culture to open up I did a lot of what we called Ask Zach sessions, where I sat down for a breakfast with 20 people at a time throughout the entire organization to just talk to me. So I tried to get as much information as possible, and there was a breakdown in trust. Clearly, there was an enormous amount of competence there. Of a 900 people, 700 of them have won championships and races. So it was about just providing direction. And so went about doing that and, you know, started once you kind of turned the boat and got us really focused again. Now it feels like it's gone pretty quick, but the first couple of years were really painful. But I always had total shareholder support. They're racers. They understood the business. So I never felt like I didn't have the runway or the resources or the ability to do what I felt I needed to do to get us back on track.
Book that I can.
All right, gentlemen. I want to talk.
Interesting, huh?
That's incredible stuff, man. I want to talk about that. Let's get a quick break in, and we'll come back and talk about that. Speed City from Austin, Texas, back after a quick break.
Motivation USA, catering to the sport bike enthusiast looking for truly unique parts and accessories. Stand out from the crowd. Motivation is the exclusive North American distributor for SC Project MotoGP inspired exhausts and the largest Rizoma retailer in the United States. Get the best parts from around the world at the best prices with fast shipping and a knowledgeable staff ready to help. Shop online 24/7 at MotivationUSA.com. That's MotivationUSA.com.
If you want to know where the path to Formula One and Indy begins, it's three simple letters, VRD. VRD Racing of Atlanta, Georgia are dedicated to nurturing young, single-seater drivers on their quest to the pinnacle of motorsport. Having just wrapped up the team's championship title in 2021 in the F4 US Championship, they also have programs in FR Americas, the all-new USF Juniors, and the Road to Indy. VRD is the perfect environment for success. To join the team, drop them a DM on Instagram at velocity_RD.
Talk 1370.
Hi, this is Gene Haas, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Jonathan, you wanted to react to what Zach said in that last segment?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the most honest I've heard anybody talk of the McLaren turnaround and, frankly, the culture that led, that basically started with Ron Dennis. And I don't mean it rudely to Ron Dennis, because he was fantastic. He came from a mechanic all the way to running a multi-million dollar company and making a lot of money himself, introducing the car industry to it too, which was a big chunk at the time, but have now stabilized. As he says, they were in financial difficulty. That compounded by the Honda woes at the beginning of their relationship,
right,
which of course, you know, killed them. Having Alonso and, you know, disgruntled and so on and so forth. So they were spiraling. And the point is, as he quite rightly, the most interesting part of that was saying, when you have a problem at the top like that, and you have changes of people coming in, Ron Dennis, then Whitmarsh and so on, then back, you know, people pulling you from left and right, that trickles down and people, you know, at the lowest level even, start to take sides on, well, I like Ron Dennis and I like, you know, and I think his job was to tiptoe in there. He'd never been a team manager, which again is no mean feat. Yeah. He started off in publishing and you know, in sales and sponsorship. I mean, his company's very successful, but running 700, 800 people in a foreign country, however much
in a pressure cooker environment.
Yeah. Hats off to Zach Brown. He is pulling it off.
And as an American.
American.
Over there, well, in that, I think, UK, to be
honest,
sport.
You know what? Honestly, and I can say this hand on heart, McLaren, as being an Englishman, needed a swashbuckling American who knew his motorsport to come in there and go, no, enough is enough. This is what we're going to do. You're out. You're in. Let's do this.
I mean, you have to. At that point, when you're literally spiraling the drain, you got to have that kind of major decision making. You have to go, I'm going to do this, and I'll go down with the ship if I'm wrong, but we're going to do something because what we're doing is not working.
And frankly, you know, I hate to say it, but Williams' story is the same. The first thing that Dalton Capital did was effectively say, Frank, Claire, we're now running the show and it's going to be for Williams Formula One, but you're not going to run it. And I think they both understood that in order to keep their name as Williams F1, which is a wonderful, wonderful franchise, Brabham have gone, Lotus have gone, you know, these names will never come back necessarily. So Williams have pulled it off, but they pulled it off by stepping back and the Americans took over. So we're seeing this sort of gradual influence, not just of Americans, but of good principals who are willing to turn the ship around.
Mm. All right, I want to go to this. Somebody commented on Twitter. It was Paul Bryan. I'm going to read his tweet because it's funny, too. He says, rumors persist that a new FIA boss, Mohammed bin
Salam,
may assess F1 driver and fashion mogul Lewis Hamilton 10 to 12 grid spots at the start of the 2022 season for missing the awards gala. And I remember that when that happened, there was discussion.
He will be fine.
I'm sorry, I started laughing when you said fashion mogul.
Fashion mogul, yeah.
He does have his own fashion brand.
He does.
So do I, but...
No, you don't have your actual own brand. You just have your own style.
No, you just
my
get
my mother
new,
puts my name in the tag.
Getting a new set of cowboy boots
Getting socks for Christmas is not a fashion brand, Les.
Okay, you win.
Now, to the serious side of this, the comments that were brought up about that is that the FIA president, Mohammed Salim, said... he said that we will look into this. And so we're going to look into the side where the technical rules, was he in breach? I'll have to look into it. And he said something like, I've got some time because the season's at a close. But that will be interesting to start the season off. Of course, if you don't believe the rumor that Lewis Hamilton is going to retire now after not winning the championship.
I don't believe that. I think he's going to come back for number 8. And I think... as much as I felt like it was petty for Toto and Lewis not to show up at the big gala, I think it wasn't a danger or a safety issue. It was just petulant, childish behavior for those two not to show up. And so if it was a safety situation, I could see addressing things after the season. It's not in competition. It's not any of that. It's just...
So what do you do? Money? Fine.
Money.
Yeah.
Can I go back to Paul Bryan? Is it Paul Bryan?
Yeah.
I love it. I love his humor. I've been reading his tweets, but I know he's going to be just as amused as I am, as we've been talking about the great change of Formula One. The more things change, the more they say the same. Because guess who is the assistant to the new Mr. Mohammed bin Salam?
Who's that?
Messi?
No. Bernie Eccleston's wife.
I was going to jokingly say Bernie.
Well, listen, the 91-year-old's 44. Good on you, Bernie. Brazilian wife is going to be working for the FIA for bin Salam. And Bernie was quoted as saying, it's true, he told Germany's Sport One. My wife is on his team. And as a good husband, I will be at her and her friend's side with help and advice. Bernie, you can't keep a good man down.
You can't keep him out of the sport.
I love the fact that somehow he's got a tentacle in there dangling it well.
Oh, that is hilarious.
There you go.
Oh, gee.
Right about that, Mr. Bryan.
Okay, now let's go. I want to play a clip from Michael Andretti about Alexander Rossi.
Ooh, yes, I like this one.
Yeah, because I don't think this is a long clip or anything, but
yeah. Have you got any cat sounds?
Yeah. So, producer, thumbs up on that one. Are you ready for that?
Thank you.
He had the cat sound.
Yeah, forget that. That's actually not Michael Andretti, although it's a very good impersonation.
All right, let's hear from Michael Andretti.
Yeah, I don't think he's ready. He was ready to commit. I think we're both looking at, you know, how's this year going to go? We have to do a better job on our side for him, and, you know, and he thinks there's things that he's got to do as well on his side. So, it'll be an interesting year to see how it goes. I'm hoping that he, you know, can turn his luck around and perform like he did the first few years with us. And, you know, if we can get to that point, and it'll be interesting to see if he'll still be driving for us or if somebody else is going to go after him. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
It's very interesting, and that's why I wanted the cat sound, because it's getting a little catty between the two of them. It seems a long... There you go. It seems a long time since he won that Indy 500, rather dramatically for Mr. Michael Andretti. He had a terrible season by his own standards. He was that far from winning it 2 years ago in a three-way battle with Joseph and Scott Dixon. This year, he was nowhere. Mm. And the 27 has been licking his wounds since, and I think there is definitely problems between you're not delivering Michael for me, and it goes both ways. You're my driver. I've got two other drivers. Colton Herta seems to be delivering. Why aren't you? Blah, 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 blah. I hope it does turn around, because Rossi, I think, would be a different driver had he won that title 2 years ago. And this is a big year for both him and Andretti.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay. And throw in Grosjean.
And I think that puts massive pressure, because I think Grosjean is going to be a huge success. He's very affable. He's very motivated. He's moving to Florida, et cetera, et cetera. And again, Mike was speaking about him. They haven't had a lot of time together, but what a golden move for Romain Grosjean in his early days. Let's face it, he's only just appeared in IndyCar, and already he's in the top team, if not the second top team.
Yeah, we got a quick clip of Michael and Andretti talking about Romain Grosjean. Let's play that.
Not a whole lot yet. I think he's in a transition of, moving his family and things like that over here. I think he's going to move to Florida, which is cool. And I think there hasn't been a whole lot of things going on within that side of it with the drivers at this point. I think it's going to really heat up after the new year. That's when it really gets hot and heavy. So, I think that's when we're going to start to feel a lot more of that and get the influence of Roman and his experience.
Interesting.
Yeah. And by the way, if you didn't hear at the top of the show, all these clips are from the EPAR trade. We'll put out this the link to this. It's all on YouTube.
Yeah, and they're all in full.
Yeah, and
great interviews.
And I'm hoping that people find. We'll put out the links, because there's no views on these things.
Go to racer.com and look it up.
Yeah, because on YouTube there's like 100, 200 views on these, and this is some of the best motorsport content out there.
Very, very good.
And that's why we had to slice this up and play some of it, because it's awesome.
Rumor has it we had a caller.
We do have a caller. We have a caller from Missouri, no less. Oh, I recognize this caller. We got Corvette Mike.
Hey!
Hey, buddy. How's it going? We got about a
Happy
minute before we got to go to the break. Mike, how's it going, buddy?
Corvette. It's good. Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Well, since we're rushed and pushed for time, I'd really like to address one in the last Formula One race that was of the season. Is it my understanding?
Well, it was quite a normal race, Mike. What are you thinking?
It's my understanding. I'm trying to talk about the part where Lewis went off the track on the right, and he held his line, Max did, and made it with no error as covering the white line. Yet, had that been a guardrail, would Lewis have had to gotten out of it? I just want to know what the real truth is. Who should have yielded? Because you have to in racing, right?
Well, to be honest, Mike, it's a great point, to be honest, because the bottom line is every time it happened, and it happened throughout the season, it was Hamilton except for Silverstone, where Verstappen ended up in hospital. It was Hamilton that had to yield, because most of the time he had to get out of the way because he was chasing Verstappen in the championship. And if they both crashed, which Verstappen clearly was happy to do if that was the case. And so Hamilton had to take avoiding action. Now, in the case that you're talking about at turn four in Saudi Arabia, effectively Hamilton did go wide and actually crossed over the outside of the track and returned onto the track still ahead of Verstappen. And the communication came back that he needed to equalize the gap that he'd had before on Verstappen. And as far as Mercedes were concerned, he did that. But that's so, I could buy four Corvettes by the time I've told you the whole story on that. But that is bottom line for that particular incident. But there were so many more.
All right, Mike, thanks for calling, buddy. I'm sorry we got to run to a break. Appreciate it. Appreciate you listening. But we're going to do a 120-second break, and we're going to be back. And the first clip we're going to play is from Michael Andretti about what happened specifically on the F1 attempt. Listen to Speed City back after these messages.
Hey,
Hey guys, we are very excited to welcome our new sponsor, Allstop Brewery, to Speed City. These guys make a fantastic beer, and I'm going to let Jonathan talk about it, but I'm going to tell you about it. When I tasted it, I'm not a big beer aficionado. I like a nice cold beer, but I'm always worried about a craft beer or a new beer that it's going to have a funky taste, especially aftertaste. This beer was fantastic. I have absolutely no qualms at all that this is my new favorite.
Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Motivation USA, catering to the sport bike enthusiast looking for truly unique parts and accessories. Stand out from the crowd. Motivation is the exclusive North American distributor for SC Project MotoGP inspired exhausts and the largest Rizoma retailer in the United States. Get the best parts from around the world at the best prices with fast shipping and a knowledgeable staff ready to help. Shop online 24/7 at MotivationUSA.com. That's MotivationUSA.com.
If you want to know where the path to Formula One and Indy begins, it's three simple letters, VRD. VRD Racing of Atlanta, Georgia are dedicated to nurturing young, single-seater drivers on their quest to the pinnacle of motorsport. Having just wrapped up the team's championship title in 2021 in the F4 US Championship, they also have programs in FR Americas, the all-new USF Juniors, and the Road to Indy. VRD is the perfect environment for success. To join the team, drop them a DM on Instagram at velocity_RD.
Talk 1370.
Hi, this is Gene Haas, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Jonathan, you wanted to react to what Zach said in that last segment?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the most honest I've heard anybody talk of the McLaren turnaround and, frankly, the culture that led, that basically started with Ron Dennis. And I don't mean it rudely to Ron Dennis, because he was fantastic. He came from a mechanic all the way to running a multi-million dollar company and making a lot of money himself, introducing the car industry to it too, which was a big chunk at the time, but have now stabilized. As he says, they were in financial difficulty. That compounded by the Honda woes at the beginning of their relationship,
right,
which of course, you know, killed them, having Alonso and, you know, disgruntled and so on and so forth. So they were spiraling. And the point is, as he quite rightly, the most interesting part of that was saying, when you have a problem at the top like that, and you have changes of people coming in, Ron Dennis, then Whitmarsh and so on, then back, you know, people pulling you from left and right, that trickles down and people, you know, at the lowest level even start to take sides on, well, I like Ron Dennis and I like, you know, and I think his job was to tiptoe in there. He'd never been a team manager, which again is no mean feat. Yeah. He started off in publishing and you know, in sales and sponsorship. I mean, his company is very successful, but running 700, 800 people in a foreign country, however much
in a pressure cooker environment.
Yeah. Hats off to Zach Brown. He is pulling it off.
And as a American.
American.
Over there, well, in that, I think, UK, to be
honest,
sport.
You know what? Honestly, and I can say this hand on heart, McLaren, as being an Englishman, needed a swashbuckling American who knew his motorsport to come in there and go, no, enough is enough. This is what we're going to do. You're out. You're in. Let's do this.
I mean, you have to. At that point, when you're literally spiraling the drain, you got to have that kind of major decision making. You have to go, I'm going to do this, and I'll go down with the ship if I'm wrong, but we're going to do something because what we're doing is not working.
And frankly, you know, I hate to say it, but Williams' story is the same. The first thing that Dalton Capital did was effectively say, Frank, Claire, we're now running the show, and it's going to be Williams Formula One, but you're not going to run it. And I think they both understood that in order to keep their name as Williams F1, which is a wonderful, wonderful franchise, Brabham have gone, Lotus have gone, you know, these
nothing
names will never come back necessarily. Yep. So Williams have pulled it off, but they pulled it off by stepping back, and the Americans took over. So we're seeing this sort of gradual influence, not just of Americans, but of good principals who are willing to turn the ship around.
Mm. All right, I want to go to somebody commented on Twitter. It was Paul Bryan. I'm going to read his tweet because it's funny, too. He says, rumors persist that a new FIA boss, Mohammed bin Salam, may assess F1 driver and fashion mogul Lewis Hamilton 10 to 12 grid spots at the start of the 2022 season for missing the awards gala. And I remember that when that happened, there was
He will be fined.
I'm sorry, I started laughing when you said fashion mogul.
But fashion, anyway. Fashion mogul, yeah.
He does have his own fashion brand.
He does.
So do I, but...
No, you don't have your actual own brand. You just have your own style.
No, you just
my
get
My mother
new,
puts my
no,
name in the tag.
Getting a
count?
New set of cowboy
Look,
boots
getting,
is not...
getting socks for Christmas is not a fashion brand, Les.
Okay, you win.
Now, to the serious side of this, the comments that were brought up about that is that the FIA president, Mohammed Salim, said... he said that we will look into this. And so we're going to look into the side where the technical rules, was he in breach? I'll have to look into it. And he said something like, I've got some time because the season's at a close. But that will be interesting to start the season off. Of course, if you don't believe the rumor that Lewis Hamilton is going to retire now after not winning the championship.
I don't believe that. I think he's going to come back for number 8. And I think... as much as I felt like it was petty for Toto and Lewis not to show up at the big gala, I think it wasn't a danger or a safety issue. It was just petulant, childish behavior for those two not to show up. And so if it was a safety situation, I could see addressing things after the season. It's not in competition. It's not any of that. It's just...
So what do you do? Money? Fine.
Money.
Yeah.
Can I go back to Paul Bryan? Is it Paul Bryan?
Yeah.
I love it. I love his humor. I've been reading his tweets, but I know he's going to be just as amused as I am as we've been talking about the great change of Formula One. The more things change, the more they say the same. Because guess who is the assistant to the new Mr. Mohammed bin Salam?
Who's that?
Messi?
No. Bernie Eccleston's wife.
I was going to jokingly say Bernie.
Listen, the 91-year-old's 44. Good on you, Bernie. Brazilian wife is going to be working for the FIA for bin Salam. And Bernie was quoted as saying, it's true, he told Germany's Sport One. My wife is on his team. And as a good husband, I will be at her and her friend's side with help and advice. You can't keep a good man down.
You can't keep him out of the sport.
Oh. I love the fact that somehow he's got a tentacle in there dangling it well.
Oh, that is hilarious.
There you go.
Oh, gee.
Right about that, Mr. Bryan.
Okay, now let's go. I want to play a clip from Michael Andretti about Alexander Rossi.
Ooh, yes, I like this one.
Yeah, because I don't think this is a long clip or anything, but yeah.
Have you got any cat sounds?
Yeah. So, producer, thumbs up on that one. Are you ready for that?
Thank you.
He had the cat sound.
Yeah, forget that. That's actually not Michael Andretti, although it's a very good impersonation.
All right, let's hear from Michael Andretti.
Yeah, I don't think he's ready. He was ready to commit. I think we're both looking at, you know, how's this year going to go? We have to do a better job on our side for him, and, you know, and he thinks there's things that he's got to do as well on his side. So, it'll be an interesting year to see how it goes. I'm hoping that he, you know, can turn his luck around and, you know, perform like he did the first few years with us. And, you know, if we can get to that point, then it'll be interesting to see if he'll still be driving for us or if somebody else is going to go after him. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
It's very interesting, and that's why I wanted the cat sound, because it's getting a little catty between the two of them. It seems a long there you go. It seems a long time since he won that Indy 500, rather dramatically for Mr. Michael Andretti. He had a terrible season by his own standards. He was that far from winning it 2 years ago in a three-way battle with Joseph and Scott Dixon. This year, he was nowhere. And the 27 has been licking his wounds since, and I think there is definitely problems between you're not delivering Michael for me, and it goes both ways. You're my driver. I've got two other drivers. Colton Herta seems to be delivering. Why aren't you? Blah, 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 blah. I hope it does turn around, because Rossi, I think, would be a different driver had he won that title 2 years ago, and this is a big year for both him and Andretti.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay. And throw in Grosjean.
And I think that puts massive pressure, because I think Grosjean is going to be a huge success. He's very affable. He's very motivated. He's moving to Florida, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And again, Mike was speaking about him. They haven't had a lot of time together, but what a golden move for Romain Grosjean in his early days. Let's face it, he's only just appeared in IndyCar, and already he's in the top team, if not the second top team.
Yeah, we had a quick clip of Michael and Andretti talking about Romain Grosjean. Let's play that.
Not a whole lot yet. You know, I think he's in a transition of, you know, moving his family and things like that over here. I think he's going to move to Florida, which is cool. And you know, I think there hasn't been a whole lot of things going on within that side of it with the drivers at this point. I think it's going to really heat up after the new year. That's when it really gets hot and heavy. So, I think that's when we're going to start to feel a lot more of that and get the influence of Roman and his experience.
Interesting.
Yep. And by the way, if you didn't hear at the top of the show, all these clips are from the EPAR trade. We'll put out this the link to this. It's all on YouTube.
Yeah, and they're all in full.
Yeah. And
great interviews.
And I'm hoping that people find – we'll put out the links, because there's no views on these things.
Yeah, like, go to racer.com and look it up.
Yeah, because on YouTube there's like 100, 200 views on these. And this is some of the best motorsport content out there.
Very, very
good. And that's why we had to slice this up and play some of it, because it's awesome.
Rumor has it we had a caller.
We do have a caller. We have a caller from Missouri, no less. Oh, I recognize this caller. We got Corvette Mike.
Hey!
Hey, buddy. How's it going? We got about a
Happy
minute before we got to go to the break. Mike, how's it going, buddy?
Corvette. It's good. Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Well, since we're rushed and pushed for time, I'd really like to address one in the last Formula One race that was of the season. Is it my understanding?
Well, it was quite a normal race, Mike. What are you thinking?
It's my understanding. I'm trying to talk about the part where Lewis went off the track on the right, and he held his line, Max did, and made it with no error as covering the white line. Yet, had that been a guardrail, would Lewis have had to gotten out of it? I just want to know what the real truth is. Who should have yielded? Because you have to in racing, right?
Well, to be honest, Mike, it's a great point, to be honest, because the bottom line is every time it happened, and it happened throughout the season, it was Hamilton except for Silverstone, where Verstappen ended up in hospital. It was Hamilton that had to yield, because most of the time he had to get out of the way because he was chasing Verstappen in the championship. And if they both crashed, which Verstappen clearly was happy to do if that was the case. And so Hamilton had to take avoiding action. Now, in the case that you're talking about at turn four in Saudi Arabia, effectively Hamilton did go wide and actually crossed over the outside of the track and returned onto the track still ahead of Verstappen. And the communication came back that he needed to equalize the gap that he'd had before on Verstappen. And as far as Mercedes were concerned, he did that. But that's so, you know, I could buy four Corvettes by the time I've told you the whole story on that. But that is bottom line for that particular incident. But there were so many more.
All right, Mike, thanks for calling, buddy. I'm sorry we got to run to a break. Appreciate it. Appreciate you listening. But we're going to do a 120-second break, and we're going to be back. And the first clip we're going to play is from Michael Andretti about what happened specifically on the F1 attempt. Listen to Speed City back after these messages. Hey guys, we are very excited to welcome our new sponsor, Allstadt Brewery, to Speed City. These guys make a fantastic beer, and I'm going to let Jonathan talk about it, but I'm going to tell you about it. When I tasted it, I'm not a big beer aficionado. I like a nice cold beer, but I'm always worried about a craft beer or a new beer that it's going to have a funky taste, especially aftertaste. This beer was fantastic. I have absolutely no qualms at all that this is my new favorite beer. But Jonathan, you know why, what makes it so special, the water and the recipe?
Well, yeah, I mean, these guys have done their research and do it right. And they've even imported the right water to do it right. I mean, I tell you, this Allstadt beer, fantastic. And most Europeans are snobs about their beer. And I'm definitely one of those. Because
you're definitely a snob?
Yes, okay. About my beer.
Okay.
because there's no question, carbonation has always been my issue here in the States. It's overcarbonated. And our lagers, our pilsners and lagers in Europe, especially German ones, are not that heavily carbonated. And that's a key thing. And that's the first thing that hit me, was just how well they've done the beer. It's based out of Fredericksburg. It's got a great tie-in, because obviously Fredericksburg, a German town, and now they've got a Texas German beer, and it's cracking.
Yeah, and the facility out there, it's amazing. They've really done it right. It's really fantastic. So check it out. You can get it at all the local HEBs and everything else, right?
Yep. It's all around Texas. You can get it. They sell it on the shelf there as a Texas beer. But I'll tell you what, you're right back in Germany when you drink it.
And it's Allstadt Beer, Allstadt Beer.com. Allstadt Beer, Allstadt Beer.com.
Talk 13-7, the right choice.
Hi, this is Bob Varsha, commentator for Sports Cars, Barrett Jackson, Collector Car Auctions, and more. You're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Some people have asked, where is Bob Varsha? And he joins us Where's Waldo? He joins us only, we can't afford Bob year-round, so he only joins us during our F1 broadcast, where we do the pre and post race shows.
Plus, he's a man of many. Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. He's out there doing, he's around the world.
That's right. And he's, in fact, speaking of, what is it? What's the series he does?
The Ultra.
The Electric Off-Road.
Off-road Enduro, or whatever.
Yeah, no, there's a name for it.
Extreme.
Extreme. Extreme. Thank you.
Thank you.
On Fox.
Yep. Andretti has a team in that, too. Yeah.
Yes, he does.
But anyway, I said we would play this clip because what happened to the F1 attempt, in the words of the man himself. But you want to set it up a little?
Well, no, I was going to say, do you want to, because some people might be living under a rock.
Good point.
Was 48. When we went to the US Grand Prix, rumors had started already that week that Sauber was going to be sold, and it was going to be, sorry, that Alfa Romeo, formerly Sauber, was going to be sold to Michael Andretti. And the deal
was strong.
And we actually thought that Michael was going to announce it. And I think that was the plan, because he says in this interview that it was 48 hours away from happening. So the sheer idea of a name like Andretti going back into Formula One was huge. So we were all on tenterhooks. It didn't happen.
Yeah. So let's hear from Michael Andretti on that.
I don't believe the rumors or what you were hearing about, you know, why it didn't happen. It had nothing to do with financials or anything like that. It was more having to do with control issues. And unfortunately, at the 11th hour, control issues changed. And, it was a deal that we had to step away from because we couldn't accept it. And I always said that we're only going to do it if it's right for us. And in the end, it wasn't right for us.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The bit he's talking about, which was, it's basically the controlling interest. And the other side of this story, as you know, Alfa Romeo have a relationship, obviously, with Ferrari. They supply them the engines, and their junior driver, Antonio Giovinazzi, has now left the team. He's still a reserve driver for Ferrari. He will also share that drive with Mick Schumacher next year. That's another big story.
Yeah, yeah.
But the real story that is not being as public is that Frédéric Vasseur basically overruled the then president of Alfa Romeo, Pascal Pici, who quit from Sauber Motorsports owner from the team over this when he was expecting to effectively, you know, consolidate the relationship with Ferrari by keeping Giovinazzi or at least not bringing in Bottas and Guanyu Zhou, who'd brought the money. And Vasseur sort of hit out. And so basically those two fell out. Pici has now quit. So that is another part of it. And in the middle of all of this, Michael comes in, wants to buy the team, has the money to do so, but then they won't get the controlling interest. And also part of that deal would have seen Gainbridge bring Colton Herta as one of the drivers. So that's where the whole thing with how long it took for the Bottas, Guanyu Zhou deal. And I remember thinking at the time, if Colton Herta does pull this off and Gainbridge brings the money, then he's going to be alongside one of the best drivers in the world in Bottas in the perfect time to learn his way in Formula One. It all fell apart. It's a real shame.
Yeah. Well, talk about what you said in this about Mick Schumacher in this. This is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
This news was right before Christmas.
Yeah. Basically, Mick Schumacher will drive for Haas Formula One next year, but he will also be an official reserve driver for Ferrari because they see him as a Ferrari driver. He drove for Prima, won the championship in F2 for them, and they consider him, with obviously Michael's legacy with Ferrari, as being the next Ferrari driver. But you got to ask the question, Ferrari have got two relatively young drivers.
Yeah.
In Carlos Sainz,
and
who they
really,
just purchased.
Really good young drivers.
Really good, and Charles Leclerc. So where does Mick fit into that? Maybe it all goes full circle. Mick does Haas and does these Friday drives along with Giovinazzi, because he's also going to be doing some Friday drives. But maybe if Leclerc and Sainz work out, because I believe that Sainz is negotiating, as we speak, another two-year contract. Leclerc is the golden boy, as we know, and is young. So there's no room for a third Ferrari driver unless he gets either Haas into the midfield. If Haas wins the midfield battle between Alfa Romeo, then Mick Schumacher could either drive for Alfa Romeo or Haas, depending on which is the better team.
Can you draw up a flowchart for all this?
Yes. Okay, absolutely.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm not. Yeah.
Who's got the cheese?
Hey, at the top of the show, I teased a story about here in Austin about COTA being potentially repaved. Jonathan, you threw that story. You saw it on. We haven't even contacted Bobby about this. We should, but we will.
We will. Yeah. Well, and this is a story that's actually come out of Bike Sport News, and so it can be effectively verified. When MotoGP came here, obviously,
Christina Bullpit.
Yes, exactly. The new editor of my Bike Sport News, our good friend Christina Bullpit. So I know it's a good story, but it quotes effectively Uncini, the technical director of MotoGP, about the complaints that were made, because as soon as MotoGP left, they said a lot of the riders were quite vociferous in the Italian press, especially, and the Spanish press, saying, we're not coming back unless they resurface the track, which is fine. That's their it's their will to say it. But that did lead to MotoGP to say to COTA, hey, you know, what are you doing? And sure, I don't think Bobby's in any way going to suddenly rip up the whole circuit and start again. Of course not. But there were two big holes or big bumps, one at 2 and one at 10. And the belief is, and that was the quote, that MotoGP believe that if those are effectively, you know, sorted by next April, then, you know, they'll be back, but they're on the calendar to be back in April, but they've only got a short window of, I believe, you know more about this, in February, right? They're not booked in February, so that's when they can get the work done.
Right. There's a series of private track days and manufacturer days here. A lot of folks don't realize, and I actually was explaining this the other day, is that I believe one of the guys told me that they had nearly 40 weeks of track usage last year. And but honestly, most of it is not for public spectator.
Yeah, 40 weeks of non-motorsport, non-public type events.
Non-spectator.
Yeah. Man, that's awesome, because that was the problem early days with COTA. It's like, hey, we need to turn this into a 365 day of revenue instead of A handful.
I've got the quote. According to Bike Sport News, FIM Grand Prix Safety Director Franco Ancini confirmed that COTA management cannot commit to a full repave of the circuit. Instead, it will work only on turn two and the complex at turn 10, where most of the problems reside. We agree to make this section with the riders, he's Italian, so that's kind of his way of talking. We agree with the riders.
There you go.
Said Ancini. And it's a real minimum we want to solve. We would like to have only one asphalt complete, but that cannot be done. They say that no time, probably, or money, but I don't know. Anyway, they cannot do a complete resurface. The minimum is for turn two and turn 10, and not only in the last layer of asphalt, but to go under and solve the problem of the bumps. And so what he means is they're going to dig under, because let's face it, I mean,
they're going to leave the top and go from underneath.
I know Bobby hates what I talk about the clay surface there, but you only need to go on the outer roads. You've been to Elroy. Bumpy out there.
Yeah. When I first went out there before it was ever built, I was like, I can't go more than about 10 miles an hour on these roads.
It is, don't you?
What's that?
It's Samsung and Elon digging and making buildings and shaking the ground.
It's Elon's boring company going underneath.
Don't worry, it'll all settle down soon. And plus, it's going to be the center of the planet soon.
Hey, I got a couple of stories I want to get in here before we got a couple minutes left. Google Trends search data shows the biggest interest in F1 since they started keeping records. I don't know if the producer can bring that chart up while I'm talking about this, but it's a link in the show doc. But anyway, it's just stunning. The same kind of thing we've already been hearing. And also, I got some of this info from the Sport Business. Let's see, what's that website called? Sports Business Journal.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about how the ESPN F1 platform saw a 281% in growth and engagement for 2021.
That's insane.
I mean, we're getting all these bits and pieces, and all of it come put together is just that F1 in the United States is.
Yeah, and I think our good friend Lee Diffie would even bow to the fact that despite the brilliant shows that NBC did and the coverage they did, we're now starting to hit those numbers on ESPN above what NBC were able to pull off. We had 1.2 million, I think, was one of the highest, but we had pretty much throughout the season, especially as the championship hotted up, over 1 million viewers here in America.
Yeah.
Imagine what it'd be if the TV announcers sounded like Americans.
Well, they can do sometimes.
One last little bit on this is that same website, Sports Business Journal. They had some of their they did their year-end awards, and this was the easiest award I guarantee you, because it was the best content, and it was Drive to Survive on Netflix. That was an easy one. I mean,
it's an embarrassment, Gene.
Yeah, and that was an easy one. They were saying how the numbers were.
Yeah, and by the way, NASCAR and MotoGP have jumped on the bandwagon and
have their own
series. I mean, Hard Knocks. I mean, that does the same thing for NFL. It's brilliant.
All right, gentlemen, we are done. Check us out on our website, speedcitybroadcast.com. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in on Facebook, YouTube. If you're on YouTube, give us some likes, give us some subscribes, all the things you need to do there. And we will talk to you next Sunday night.
Ciao, y'all.
Happy trails.
Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try assemble and bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey guys, we are very excited to welcome our new sponsor, Allstadt Brewery, to Speed City. These guys make a fantastic beer, and I'm going to let Jonathan talk about it, but I'm going to tell you about it. When I tasted it, I am not a big beer aficionado. I like a nice cold beer, but I'm always worried about a craft beer or a new beer that it's going to have a funky taste, especially aftertaste. This beer was fantastic. I have absolutely no qualms at all that this is my new favorite beer. But Jonathan, you know why, what makes it so special, the water and the recipe?
Well, yeah, I mean, these guys have done their research and do it right. And they've even imported the right water to do it right. I mean, I tell you, this Allstadt beer, fantastic. And most Europeans are snobs about their beer. And I'm definitely one of those. Because
you're definitely a snob?
Yes, okay. About my beer.
Okay.
because there's no question, carbonation has always been my issue here in the States. It's overcarbonated. And our lagers, our pilsners and lagers in Europe, especially German ones, are not that heavily carbonated. And that's a key thing. And that's the first thing that hit me, was just how well they've done the beer. It's based out of Fredericksburg. It's got a great tie-in, because obviously Fredericksburg, a German town, and now they've got a Texas German beer, and it's cracking.
Yeah, and the facility out there, it's amazing. They've really done it right. It's really fantastic. So check it out. You can get it at all the local HEBs and everything else, right?
Yep. It's around all around Texas. You can get it. They sell it in on the shelf there as a Texas beer. But I'll tell you what, you're right back in Germany when you drink it.
And it's Allstadt Beer, Allstadt Beer.com. Allstadt Beer, Allstadt Beer.com.
Talk 13-7, the right choice.
Hi, this is Bob Varsha, commentator for Sports Cars, Barrett-Jackson, Collector Car Auctions, and more. You're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Some people have asked, where is Bob Varsha? And he joins us Where's Waldo? He joins us only... We can't afford Bob year-round, so he only joins us during our F1 broadcast, where we do the pre- and post-race shows.
Plus, he's a man of many. Yeah.
Yeah,
he's,
exactly.
He's out there doing... He's around the world.
That's right. And he's... In fact, speaking of... what is it? What's the series he does?
The Ultra...
the Electric Off-Road...
Off-Road Enduro, whatever.
Yeah, no, there's a name for it.
Extreme.
Thank you.
On Fox.
Yep. Andretti has a team in that, too. Yeah.
Yes, he does.
But anyway, I said we would play this clip because what happened to the F1 attempt, in the words of the man himself. But you want to set it up a little?
No, I was going to say, do you want to, because some people might be living under a rock.
Well, good point.
Was 48. When we went to the US Grand Prix, rumors had started already that week that Sauber was going to be sold, and it was going to be, sorry, that Alfa Romeo, formerly Sauber,
yeah,
was going to be sold to Michael Andretti. And the deal
was strong.
And we actually thought that Michael was going to announce it. And I think that was the plan, because he says in this interview that it was 48 hours away from happening. So the sheer idea of a name like Andretti going back into Formula One was huge. So we were all on tenterhooks. It didn't happen.
Yeah. So let's hear from Michael Andretti on that.
I don't believe the rumors or what you were hearing about, you know, why it didn't happen. It had nothing to do with financials or anything like that. It was more having to do with control issues. And unfortunately, at the 11th hour, control issues changed. And, it was a deal that we had to step away from because we couldn't accept it. And I always said that we're only going to do it if it's right for us. And in the end, it wasn't right for us.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The bit he's talking about, which was, it's basically the controlling interest. And the other side of this story, as you know, Alfa Romeo have a relationship, obviously, with Ferrari. They supply them the engines, and their junior driver, Antonio Giovinazzi, has now left the team. He's still a reserve driver for Ferrari. He will also share that drive with Mick Schumacher next year. That's another big story.
Yeah, yeah.
But the real story that is not being as public is that Frederic Vasseur basically overruled the then president of Alfa Romeo, Pascal Pici, who quit from Sauber Motorsports owner from the team over this, when he was expecting to effectively, you know, consolidate the relationship with Ferrari by keeping Giovinazzi, or at least not bringing in Bottas and Guanyu Zhou, who'd brought the money, and Vasseur sort of hit out. And so basically those two fell out. Pici has now quit. So that is another part of it. And in the middle of all of this, Michael comes in, wants to buy the team, has the money to do so, but then they won't get the controlling interest. And also part of that deal would have seen Gainbridge bring Colton Herta as one of the drivers. So that's where the whole thing with how long it took for the Bottas, Guanyu Zhou deal. And I remember thinking at the time, if Colton Herta does pull this off and Gainbridge brings the money, then he's going to be alongside one of the best drivers in the world in Bottas in the perfect time to learn his way in Formula One. It all fell apart. It's a real shame.
Yeah. Well, talk about what you said in this about Mick Schumacher in this. This is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
This news was right before Christmas.
Yeah. Basically, Mick Schumacher will drive for Haas Formula One next year, but he will also be an official reserve driver for Ferrari because they see him as a Ferrari driver. He drove for Prima, won the championship in F2 for them. And they consider him, with obviously Michael's legacy with Ferrari, as being the next Ferrari driver. But you got to ask the question, Ferrari have got two relatively young drivers.
Yeah.
In Carlos Sainz,
and
who they
really,
just purchased.
Really good young driver.
Really good, and Charles Leclerc. So where does Mick fit into that? Maybe it all goes full circle. Mick does Haas and does these Friday drives along with Giovinazzi, because he's also going to be doing some Friday drives. But maybe if Leclerc and Sainz work out, because I believe that Sainz is negotiating, as we speak, another two-year contract. Leclerc is the golden boy, as we know, and is young. So there's no room for a third Ferrari driver unless he gets either Haas into the midfield. If Haas wins the midfield battle between Alfa Romeo, then Mick Schumacher could either drive for Alfa Romeo or Haas, depending on which is the better team.
Can you draw up a flowchart for all this?
Yes. Okay, absolutely.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm not. Yeah.
Who's got the cheese?
Hey, at the top of the show,
first?
Top of the show, I teased a story about here in Austin about COTA being potentially repaved. Jonathan, you threw that story. You saw it on.
Yeah.
We haven't even contacted Bobby about this. We should, but we.
Yeah,
and
no, we will. We will.
Yeah.
Well, and this is a story that's actually come out of Bike Sport News, and so it can be effectively verified. When MotoGP came here, obviously.
Christina Bullpit.
Yes, exactly. The new editor of my Bike Sport News, our good friend Christina Bullpit. So I know it's a good story, but it quotes effectively Uncini, the technical director of MotoGP, about the complaints that were made, because as soon as MotoGP left, they said a lot of the riders were quite vociferous in the Italian press, especially, and the Spanish press, saying we're not coming back unless they resurface the track, which is fine. That's it's their will to say it. But that did lead to MotoGP to say to COTA, hey, you know, what are you doing? And sure, I don't think Bobby's in any way going to suddenly rip up the whole circuit and start again. Of course not. But there were two big holes or big bumps, one at 2 and one at 10. And the belief is, and that was the quote, that MotoGP believe that if those are effectively, you know, sorted by next April, then, you know, they'll be back. But they're on the calendar to be back in April, but they've only got a short window of, I believe, you know more about this, in February, right? They're not booked in February, so that's when they can get the work done.
Right. There's a series of private track days and manufacturer days here. A lot of folks don't realize, and I actually was explaining this the other day, is that I believe one of the guys told me that they had nearly 40 weeks of track usage last year.
Mm.
And, but honestly, most of it is not for public spectator.
Yeah. 40 weeks of non-motorsport, non-public type events.
Non-spectator.
Yeah. Man, that's awesome, because that was the problem early days with COTA. It's like, hey, we need to turn this into a 365 day of revenue instead of A handful.
I've got the quote. According to Bike Sport News, FIM Grand Prix Safety Director Franco Ancini confirmed that COTA management cannot commit to a full repave of the circuit. Instead, it will work only on turn two and the complex at turn 10, where most of the problems reside. We agree to make this section with the riders. He's Italian, so that's kind of his way of talking. We agree with the riders.
There you go.
Said Ancini. And it's a real minimum. We want to solve. We would like to have only one asphalt complete, but that cannot be done. They say that no time, probably, or money, but I don't know. Anyway, they cannot do a complete resurface. The minimum is for turn two and turn 10, and not only in the last layer of asphalt, but to go under and solve the problem of the bumps. And so what he means is they're going to dig under, because let's face it, I mean,
they're going to leave the top and go from underneath.
I know Bobby hates what I talk about the clay surface there, but you only need to go on the outer roads. You've been to Elroy. Bumpy out there.
Yeah. When I first went out there before it was ever built, I was like, I can't go more than about 10 miles an hour on these roads.
You know what it is, don't you?
What's that?
It's Samsung and Elon digging and making buildings and shaking the ground.
It's Elon's boring company going underneath.
Don't worry. It'll all settle down soon. And plus, it's going to be the center of the planet soon.
Hey, I got a couple of stories I want to get in here before we got a couple minutes left. Google Trends search data shows the biggest interest in F1 since they started keeping records. I don't know if the producer can bring that chart up while I'm talking about this, but it's a link in the show doc. But anyway, it's just stunning. The same kind of thing we've already been hearing. And also, I got some of this info from the Sport Business. Let's see, what's that website called? Sports Business Journal.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about how the ESPN F1 platform saw a 281% in growth and engagement for 2021.
That's insane.
I mean, we're getting all these bits and pieces, and all of it come put together is just that F1 in the United States is.
Yeah, and I think our good friend Lee Diffie would even bow to the fact that despite the brilliant shows that NBC did and the coverage they did, we're now starting to hit those numbers on ESPN above what NBC were able to pull off. We had 1.2 million, I think, was one of the highest, but we had pretty much throughout the season, especially as the championship hotted up, over 1 million viewers here in America.
Yeah.
Imagine what it would be if the TV announcers sounded like Americans.
Well, they can do sometimes.
One last little bit on this is that same website, Sports Business Journal. They had some of their they did their year-end awards, and this was the easiest award, I guarantee you, because it was the best content, and it was Drive to Survive on Netflix. That was an easy one. I mean,
it's an embarrassment, Gene.
Yeah, and that was an easy one. They were saying how the numbers were.
Yeah, and by the way, NASCAR and MotoGP have jumped on the bandwagon and have
their own
series. I mean, Hard Knocks. I mean, that does the same thing for NFL. It's brilliant.
All right, gentlemen, we are done. Check us out on our website, speedcitybroadcast.com. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in on Facebook, YouTube. If you're on YouTube, give us some likes, give us some subscribes, all the things you need to do there. And we will talk to you next Sunday night.
Ciao, y'all.
Happy trails.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.